Hi, Ian here. Today's one-off between season special is a Doctor Who podcast crossover as I talk to all three Diddly Dum hosts at once about which five Who stories or things they'll be taking with them into the cutaway bunker. Also present is the boss, Cutaway's Gareth Cavanna. Recorded at the Doctor Who Appreciation Society's Capital Six Decades event, the session was a lot of fun, and we might have been a little bit drunk, but we were in the convention's media room, which in reality was a big, high-ceiling chamber in a hotel. So it sounds like we recorded in a swimming pool. Apologies. Now, the four-minute warning is sounding. The missiles are launched. Quick! Into the bunker!
Sontaran Empire and the bandaged-faced traffic warden from Threads. You shelter below ground, waiting for rad levels to drop to safe levels. Alone, with nothing more than minimal food rations. And somewhat improbably, five stories from the Doctor Who universe in any medium. TV, audio, film, novel, comic book. These artifacts, they'll be your only link to the past, maybe for the rest of your life. Welcome to The Bunker, a Doctor Who podcast from Cutaway Comics, brought to you by Bamalan Productions. And now, here's your host, Ian Winterton.
Bit of a different bunker today. We are at the Capital Dwas Convention in Crawley in... Is it Sussex or Essex?
West Sussex.
Yeah. I don't know the south. But we are here, and today is very special. I'm very excited because we have with us the three guys from the fourth best podcast in the Doctor Who universe, Diddly Dum, and it's my favourite podcast.
Oh,
I think. It's up there anyway. I definitely haven't missed an issue in many, many years.
Money's in the post.
Yeah, yes. Thanks. So also with me, unusually, is Gareth Cavanna.
Ooh. Who we... I don't know why I've done that. There we go. Imagine me waving and...
Yeah. It's Gareth Cavanna. Who is obviously the head of Cutaway Comics.
Gosh,
and our sponsor at his expense. But he's here because... This is going to be all done very on the hoof, and Gareth actually genuinely knows lots about Doctor Who.
I know.
Whereas I have to Google before, quite often. But because
although your kids know more than both of us about the new series,
they probably do. They probably do. But before we go on, if you could introduce yourselves, starting with yourself, sir.
Hello, listeners. I'm Doc,
and I'm Hayden.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Gareth. Yes.
And that's Gareth over there.
Oh, I've cut away comics. Yes.
So now you have the voices, and I'm Ian. So usually it's pick your five favourite, and you're all alone in the bunker. But this time we're imagining it's the three Diddly Dummers.
Oh, God.
Actually in a bunker, possibly for years together.
Oh, no. Trapped in the Hoosian bunker.
And
half the mama set's been...
Do they get five each? Now, do they get five each, or are they...
This is what we were just talking about off mic, isn't
five
it? Are we going to go for 15...
Jesus.
Or are we going to fight over which five you could have?
I think they fight.
I think we fight. Or we'll be here all night.
Although, of course, as they expire one at a time, the one that's left might end up like
you're going to end up
five that you can't stand.
I think what you might do, not literally fighting to the death.
You've got five choices. And between you have to negotiate. So you might not want one.
No.
But what are you willing to
go without so that that person doesn't have that awful episode.
Well, this will be very interesting because we are all of different eras as well, yeah, aren't we? There's a varying age within different, yeah,
jobs. Well, the thing I found interviewing lots of different people about, as we'll get into your Doctor Who origin story in a minute, but is how everybody seems to have a gap. They seem to have the Doctor you didn't choose, then the Doctor you came that was the one after the one that was when you were very little, and then the one that you think's awful because you were a teenager.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you rediscover it.
The cultural cringe.
Well, you either rediscover it if you're in this room and at this convention because you're still a Doctor Who fan into adulthood, or that's when you gave up on Doctor Who.
I think Stephen Moffat kind of alluded to that because he did a panel here today at
I was
convention,
in it, yeah.
And he sort of alluded to that when he said how he'd kind of got into how he started watching it a bit when he was very little with the Patrick Troughtons, and then he kind of got into the Pertwees a bit, then and then the Toms, then he said and even Peter Davison. Then there was a gap where I thought Doctor Who's terribly silly, and I came back and it was Sylvester McCoy, and we thought, oh, poor Colin.
He didn't overtly slag off the Colin years.
No,
He just started saying, the Sylvester McCoy years, when I was a silly young man, I thought they were silly, but they're marvellous.
Yes.
But yes, I think he's on record in many places as saying classic Who is, maybe it was time to rest it, etc, etc. But we'll start with you, Doug. How did you first get into Doctor Who? What age are you, if you don't mind? I mean, never ask a lady her age, but what age are you? When did you get into Doctor Who?
When I got into Doctor Who, what age am I now?
Well, both, I guess.
Late 20s. 1920s. I'm approaching middle age. I got into Doctor Who, like I think most people in the UK. Because I think that for people of most of our generation, it's not like if you're interviewing someone, say, in Canada or the States, might have all got into it in this unusual way. But I think for most of us, it was just a natural part of your childhood, wasn't it? It's like, almost like saying, how did you start eating beans on toast?
Yep.
It's
for me and you, it was.
Somebody you gave you a tin of beans
on television.
Let's be honest, though. We weren't like at the feast, were we? You know, there was two nutritious meals to eat. There was Doctor Who for 23 minutes a week, and occasionally there was Space 1999 on a Sunday in Gravaland for 51 minutes a week, and the rest of the time TV was made up of brown cardboardy things and the news and snooker and Terry and June. that was what TV consisted of.
You can say it, Jim will fix it.
And Jim will fix it,
Jim will fix it.
I've read only a few refuses. Well, not on Saturday nights for me, because it was
Basil Brush.
Grandstand, Basil Brush, Doctor Who, The Generation Game. The two, I might be running out of hours here. The two
Kojak.
Ronnies.
Kojak or the two Ronnies.
A Saturday night at the movies.
Parkinson.
For me, Parkinson, Starsky and Hutch.
You just described my childhood too.
Really,
so I'm 51.
Back in the 70s.
I'm 56.
That sounds...
Yeah, yeah.
I think Doc has added in a couple of hours there.
I can't believe your parents let you stay up so late.
You haven't even
it's a mystery to me what was on after
Match of the Day must have been on, sure.
Match of the Day would slide in there, that's true.
Yeah. My main memory, not this about me, my main memory is of, I've always hated sport. I don't hate it as much now, but when I was a kid, I really hated it.
Oh, God, it was boring.
But my main memory of, in York, because I grew up in Yorkshire, was Eddie Waring on the local channel. Saying some boring results or something, because Doctor Who was going to be on in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was just that those waiting for the sport to finish was a torture. But then there was Doctor Who at the end of the tunnel.
It was the anticipation, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And TV was a... I remember trying to explain to the Americans when we were out there that back here, and it made us sound like Albania, that we had three TV channels, one of which was only on part-time, and they all closed at 11 o'clock where we played like the national anthem, and then it did that was it off. And they went,
Please remember to turn off your set.
That's right. Yeah. You know, and it did make us sound like Albania, to be fair.
Yeah. But Doc, so
without the Norman Wisdom reason.
So Doctor Who's always been there.
It's and always been
so
there.
So what are your earliest memories, Pertwee?
Well, my earliest
Charlton.
This is Cardinal.
I know,
just I used to think that my first story was Day of the Quite Daleks. Because it was the first one I remember, but I'm wondering whether that's one of the ones that they're repeated later. That's I can remember. The first one I can absolutely think. Yeah, I can remember sitting watching that on a Saturday night. Probably something around Sea Devils.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember things. I don't remember much of. You know when they say, people like Ian Levine, sort of.
Spider-Man.
As we plan to be calling him from now on Baron Harkonnen.
Yeah. Oh yes, I forgot about that. For the listener, that was a drunken comment. We me and Doc both made at the same time about that said Doctor Who fan. Baron Harkonnen.
We'll say things like, oh yeah, I remember watching Power of the Daleks when I was a boy. But I think you can possibly vaguely remember watching it. I can't believe that anyone actually remembers much of the plot back.
Ian, as far as I'm aware, would faithfully record it and then faithfully fill in his exercise books of all the plot and the description. So he's like a human VCR. Yeah.
No, the thing I remember most was not the series, but what I used to do in between series. To get my fix, and so it was the Target books, the Terror Sticks Doctor Who Monster book, the audio cassette of Pescatons, the LP of Genesis, things, stuff like that.
All the same as that's mine and Gareth's, even though we're a tiny bit younger than you.
Things
that's
we,
kind of
you
our
can
generation.
Obsess with and listen to over and over again.
So
the victory nighter.
So from one extreme to the other, we have Hayden,
who's
a fetus.
I'm barely gestating.
A youth.
He's so young. It wouldn't even yet cast him as the Doctor.
No, and I've been ID'd twice at the bar today as well.
Oh my God!
How refreshing.
You're actually a little bit older than that. Yeah. How
been
old
ID'd
are you?
Since 1996.
Yeah, I'm nearly 34.
Oh, so that's fucking. That's ancient.
Yeah,
I thought you were like 25.
No,
you sadly not. Sadly not.
No. So you used to be young and now you're not, and that's the way of things.
Very much so, very much so.
But so what's your... So does that make your world... I'm rubbish
at maths. That makes you an awkward teenager when the show comes back.
Yep, I was 16.
So how did you feel about the burping bins and fart jokes?
Very beneath me at the time.
Yeah.
Very beneath me.
Well, that's really interesting, actually, because I'm so used to hearing people that are either Classic Who... or they were young and it was 2005.
This isn't the same show as Genesis of the Daleks. Very elegant Nazi parables.
From what I picked up from listening to you in the podcast, you were very early adopter, but you were a wilderness child.
Which is
what your book is about.
Repeat seasons is your gateway to this, really. Repeat seasons on BBC Two and things like
that. Not even that.
Tell them the year of your birth then.
So I was born 1989.
So
I was born, and I was born the week that they were filming Survival. I think they were doing the location stuff for Survival. So as the show is ending, I am starting.
Wow.
And Doctor Who, it's funny what you said, Doc, actually, because it kind of was always there in the background. There was always something going on. I remember when I was about three or four, and I remember seeing... on TV, John Pertwee being attacked by Morris dancers, thinking, "What are those poor people doing? What are those people doing to poor Wurzel Gummidge?" and just thinking, "This is insane! Like, what is this?"
Oh, so that's those recolorized episodes, then.
Yes, that would be 93, early 93, I think.
Late 92.
So that's good because what it was, and I worked this out recently when we did an episode on the invasion, and I went back and I was looking at the schedules of when it was repeated. And what I could work out my parents' schedule, because Thunderbirds would be shown at 6 o'clock on BBC Two, and then when that finished, that's when the repeats of The Mind Robber, Sea Devils, Green Devil, all that kind of stuff would then come. Caves of Androzani, Revelation of the Daleks, but that was the point where I went to bed. So I didn't get Doctor Who, but I must have seen The Demons at some point. And just remember that little snippet. But then we also had in...
The Green Death was on Sunday mornings, though, wasn't it? They went through a weird phase of showing Pertwee repeats on Sunday mornings, if you remember. It's like they had... It was the slot where they had something like The Fugitive, and then suddenly they showed like The Green Death, and I think they showed The Sea Devils yet again, and something else on Sunday morning. So,
well, my memory of it is that, I mean, my parents were both fans. They were both. My dad remembered watching the first episode. So, and he would, and as I got more and more into the program, it was actually, funnily enough, it was the TV movie, and it was the build up to the TV movie, and it was. Predominantly the Radio Times pullout, the return of the Time Lord.
It's a very handsome 16-page pullout.
Fantastic. I loved it. I went to my great nan's home that she was in, up in Warwickshire, and she her Radio Times just flopped open to the middle, and it was still there in the middle. And I sort of went over to her and saw it, you know, having a look at it. My dad kind of looked over my shoulder and said, "Oh, Doctor Who." I said, "Oh, which one's Doctor Who?" And he said, "All of them." And at that point, that's kind of like, that's the moment, exactly. That's when your head explodes full of the possibilities of what this could mean.
It's my favourite Hader story.
And it was like, it was a real, like, oh, so he's him, and here's him. And it was a beautiful pull out because you had, you know, it had all the facts there. And by the end of the day, I knew that the Romans had the highest audience figure for the first Doctor, and I knew that City of Death was the
does
just,
it
even though yeah
higher than the web planet.
I think it was the Romans. It was one episode. I don't know. Anyway, 13 odd million. But anyway, it was that sort
of
thing.
Let's not argue with the Radio Times pullout. Obsessively poured over by a 7-year-old. I feel your grasp of knowledge is better.
But it was. I was literally obsessed just from that. And then at the end of that Easter weekend, that was when. The TV movie was shown. We stayed up and watched it. But it was funny.
And you still became a Doctor Who.
I love the TV movie. It gets virtually everything.
I love
right.
Paul McGann.
Yeah, he's good. And Eric Roberts was a hoot in LA, and I think he's very good. He's got that nice arch sensibility. The best, sexiest looking TARDIS.
I'm probably well overdue a rewatch.
It's very good. You know.
Well overdue.
It's funny because the things I didn't like back then were the things I liked when I watched it first time around. Well, it made perfect sense for me to be there to be like a romantic element to it because it's a boy and a girl and you know and that sort of thing and setting it in America. Well, everything was in America as a kid. You know, Star Trek was in America. You know, everyone had American accents, so I was used to that as well. The whole backstory. Being jammed into the first sort of 2 minutes on screen, and which of course was a mistake because it just. But anyway, it was that sort of thing.
You remind people that this was a program that had history. Otherwise, you just go. Well,
and McCoy being there as well.
Or
with,
did you? Could you do it like J&T later did it and just go?
Oh, RTD,
Let's worry about filling in. Try and look people in silly hats later.
Those McCoy bits though on broadcast were my favourite bits of it to see that TARDIS there and him sitting there reading his book and enjoying a cup of tea. That was the best bits of it for me.
Before they went to a
and the brutal gunning down as he opens the door is a brilliant, you know, ironic, you know, brutally ironic twist for the grand chess master of time. He opens the door and gets machine gun.
Now, am I wrong, Gareth?
See that
Gareth, you're from there. But am I right in remembering that didn't happen on the British broadcast?
No, they cut it down.
But does he still get machine gun?
Yeah, he's still shot.
I think what they cut down was the footage of
because now we all just watch the Netflix version, which is so brutal.
They cut down the footage that it was kids that were machine gunning it,
right?
From memory,
and they probably didn't have quite as many.
Yeah, it was because
it was a full 18.
Because I think because it was kind of kids with machine guns.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's because of that scene that it scuppered the. The money grubbing scheme to release the video a week before.
Oh, yeah.
Because suddenly they went, oh, hang on a minute, this isn't a 12. I think you find this is an 18 with children with machine guns. Oh, bollocks. And then suddenly these 100,000 units they thought they were going to shift in a week dropped considerably because everyone watched it for free.
Oh, dear. But, anyway. But yeah, so.
How the mighty.
So 1996, and you'll never look back. And,
no.
And Mark. You're similar vintage to me, I believe.
Yes, indeed.
two just.
Yeah, yeah.
Just.
So
gather a mark.
So you don't remember Pertwee, but
I have vague memories, like the imagery of Planet of the Spiders seems to trigger some sort of
that's really slight, but that's almost impossible.
that
is almost, maybe just that one year makes a difference.
But I have, it's season 12. I can remember my earliest memory of Doctor Who, as far as I'm aware, vague memories of the giant robot. Mm-hmm. Again, just nothing specific, not specific to the scene. But definitely the scene where, from Genesis the Daleks, where Tom's in the incubator and he's got the
he's got the jelly strangle.
He's got the old jelly necktie on that he's having a bit of trouble getting right. Trying to straighten it, and he's choking and reeling around.
Yeah, maybe it is just that one year. Because
lovely melodic.
Because obviously, crashing. I'd have been two, you'd have been three.
Yeah.
So,
that imagery, and also the Sontaran head deflating.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, that was grim.
In my head as well. And then, it was just on television. It was on occasionally. My family used to watch it, and then I just got into it, and then I think it was probably 78, 79 that things kicked up a gear. I went from picking up the odd Target novel, like in, we didn't really have charity shops as such back then, or boot fairs. We used to go to like fairs at school.
Bring them
by.
Christmas fairs.
And summer fairs at schools.
Bring them by, sir.
And I used to get me Blue Peter annuals and my Doctor Who annuals and my Target books from there. And I used to pick those up occasionally. But it was, it's probably 79 that things really kicked up a notch, I think, when Doctor Who Weekly came out. Yeah. And also, we moved from Cardiff over to Wiltshire. So suddenly my entire... I lost all my friends that I'd built up over those years, and was moved.
So your Doctor Who books became your new friends.
Yes, this is why I have such an affection for season 17, I think, as well, because because that became my family. So I moved during that year. So season 17 came out just after we'd moved. So one of the first things I had to latch onto in this new place was Doctor Who's still there, they're still there. And so it's that became a really important season for me, which is why I'd like to.
You make it so hard for me to tease you over how bad I think season 17
is. I fight to the
death
over season 17. I know.
This is what will be coming up. What will Mark pick?
I know what Mark will pick. That's the thing that worries me.
I had a question based on what you've all just said is what do you think makes us different to everyone else? Because there's a point where everyone enjoys Doctor Who, and then you suddenly nobody's watching Doctor Who apart from us. A bit like, you know, what's that sort of in Superman? What's that magic green crystal that Clark Kent finds that turns him into Superman that no one else seems to have? What do you think it is? Because I remember going through secondary school.
Do you think
everyone
being a
Doctor
Who
fan
is analogous for becoming Superman?
Well, you know, but there's that point
where
Superman
into Clark Kent.
maybe that's the way around.
I think it's because the show runs in cycles, and because we're such long term fans and we have such a good understanding of the history of the show, we know that it might not be so good at the moment, but it will get good again at some point. I think that's the reason why we hold on. I think that's it.
And like I said, I think because for me it was a time that when it switched from just being, oh, I'm really enjoying this, I like the books, I like the stuff, to actually this is really
an article
important
of faith.
To me was because I'd gone through upheaval, and so it was something for me to cling on to. And obviously that's not everyone's experience.
Isn't it as well? It's a show that can do anything and everything at any point.
Yeah,
and but I think it's just that as well.
I think it is anti-macho as well. So I think that's why. Obviously, everyone's different, but there is a sort of unifying.
Have you seen Vengeance on Varus?
Huh. We're slightly.
There's a lot of pecs in that.
Well, that's another angle of Doctor Who.
But interestingly, the Eric Sayward era is seen as an outlier in many ways in the show.
Mm.
the Eric Saward era, his the stories that were made under his stewardship, I watched as a kid.
Mm.
I bloody loved.
I love them.
Resurrection of the Daleks.
That
for
gave
me
it's
a great action thriller.
Yeah,
done on a budget of Terry and
yeah.
June.
Resurrection it's of the incredible. Daleks for me yeah. was when I went Doctor Who's not shit anymore.
Really?
Because I'd gone off it a bit, and then I was like, oh, "Daleks are brilliant. There's blood yeah. everywhere, and I'm 13."
Everyone gets.
Do you have that sort of post Tom thing where you're like not sure about?
Yeah, I now really like Peter Davison, but I never got. Well, I was going to say one of the things about our generation is it's really hard to imagine. A bit like we've had with Tennant in the new era. Yeah. Really, he stayed so long. He became Doctor Who and half killed the show. So. As a result, because it was really hard to move on from Tom being the Doctor. Mm. I remember it being, I was at chapel, you know, because I brought up Methodist, went to a chapel, and the subject of the day was mourning, but through the prism of, we're all sad to see Tom Baker go.
Really?
It really was, yeah.
Really?
In this like little amazing. Yorkshire mining village. and he's talking about yes, we all miss Tom Baker. It's hard to imagine him being, but there's somebody else along. He's
so moted be,
yeah.
And this too shall pass.
Yes, yeah. But
so I think the anti-macho is a really good.
Well, I think it is. Yeah. He doesn't run around. He's you know, and I think that's probably a whatever your sexuality. That's probably a reason why. If you feel like an outsider because of your sexuality, it picks
I think that's a big thing. You know, they always say it's got an unusually large gay following, Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I think it's apparently because you're not expected to be great at... This is why I didn't like Matt Smith showing off, oh, well, I'm good at football in The Lodger, whatever it was called.
Mm.
Because you didn't have to be good at sports.
Even the
to
doctor
be
can play bloody football.
Friend. You didn't have to be go around being able to... hit someone or fight someone.
Mm.
You have to be go around, you know. Well, it does nowadays. You know, snugging girls, being successful with girls all the time. All you had to do is to be the doctor's friend and be prepared to jump in front of a bullet for him, and that would earn you a place in the TARDIS.
And also, because I used to play Doctor Who in the playground, and it suited because everyone else was playing. A lot of them were just playing football. Or they were playing big, massive British Bulldog or whatever. Mm. But me and my one or two friends were playing Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And that's that, because we didn't have loads of friends. So I'd be Tom, because I was tall and range, had curly hair. And everyone else would be companions.
Wow.
And it's sort of, so there is that element.
There is, and I've noticed a lot.
Like
running through fandom as well, and I know this from talking to people in our local group, there seems to be a lot of people with estrangement issues from their fathers, or they're distant from their fathers, and I think there's something in that character of the Doctor that's almost, you know,
that's interesting.
Is a surrogate father, almost. An idealised father.
My dad left when I was three.
Yeah.
So, which is, and if you think about it, that's when my earliest memories of Doctor Who started coming in. My dad also was a tall bloke with curly hair.
Right.
So,
I think
I projected quite a lot onto the Fourth Doctor when I was that age.
Yeah, I think I did. My dad never left us till he died, but he was a workaholic, and so he was very absent.
And he was
different in later years, but he was quite overbearing and shouty. He was basically. I grew up thinking all men were like Basil Fawlty because my dad looked and acted like Basil Fawlty. You know, he talked to inanimate objects and went, right!
Damn good at thrashing!
I'm going to kill you, Biro, if I don't find you!
Maybe this is a generational thing again.
Yeah.
Because
with
me, that was the thing, sci-fi would be the thing I'd actually watch with my dad.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the Star Trek, so obviously,
there was
Next
more
Generation, DS9 and everything. I could watch them with him, and Doctor Who as well. Although I have to stipulate, and this was a very interesting sort of attitude I found in my parents at the time, was that they were groan if I wanted to put a black and white one on. They hated black and white, and it felt like there was a time in the 90s where like Laurel and Hardy films were being colourised and things like that, and there was like black and white's old means rubbish and useless and that sort of
thing. Oh, I don't know, my mother would have like laser like critical faculties. I remember watching The Gunfighters on UK Gold one Christmas. And she just walked through the lounge and went, this is a bit amateurish, dear. And just walked out into the kitchen. I thought, damn, she's nailed it in one walk through the lounge.
But
mother's critique is bang on.
But then there were three things I would bond with my dad over, and that was music, football, funny enough, and cricket, I guess you could extend that to as well, and TV.
It was
a bonding thing for us, but maybe that was because it was a generation removed, and it was like, this is what I watched when I was a kid. I enjoy this. I've got a 2-year-old son now who is absolutely obsessed with Thunderbirds.
Yeah.
So I get to watch Thunderbirds with him.
Well, I've got a 7-year-old who's absolutely obsessed with Doctor Who. I do not know.
But our fathers are of a generation that wouldn't have watched Doctor Who. They would have viewed that as a children's show.
But even my grandfather would have watched it up until Colin Baker. He watched it. He said, "Oh, I watched it until the mid '80s." Then that stupid code came out. And I thought, no, I'm not watching this anymore.
I remember my mother hoping that I would grow out of Doctor Who. I remember saying, do you think this has been a good thing for you staying all this time in Doctor Who? It's one of those difficult Tom Bakers. Have I got the right? Am I better off? And I think I am as a Doctor Who fan. I've met friends and amazing people, and it's been enriching. But I can also see another path. But then I'd have just been like an obsessive United fan or an obsessive something fan, and probably something much less healthy. And I think, I love football, but I hate going to watch live matches because it's just a cauldron of hate.
Yeah.
Where it's the only place you're allowed for 2 hours to call the opposition absolute subhuman filth.
And your own players sometimes.
And your own players. Yeah. The whole thing is built on hate, which is unhealthy.
And yet how similar it is to the
Doctor Who
fandom
in the late
80s. Oh, it totally is. I remember just thinking, like, when Doctor Who came back, I just remember thinking, God, people are talking about it like it's their team, because they're going, it's almost like they used we, like football fans do, what we should do. And they were going, what we should do, right, is, Billy Piper, that sounds like the wrong move to me. Mm. And it's like they were talking about what Ferguson should do. And
fantasy showrunner, is the ultimate game.
I mean, the amount of fans that go, oh, Billy Piper, what's he thinking? This is going to be awful. Oh, it's amazing.
Chibnall's lost the production team, isn't he?
He's lost the production team.
Right into town.
But people do obsess about ratings like they do about results. The energy that goes into ratings. And when they're great, they're great. When they're not great, well, they don't matter, do they?
There was a turning point in 2005 where being a Doctor Who fan felt like being a very exclusive club, to all of a sudden your club had been ransacked by everybody else.
The populists.
Because I remember being on the...
Do you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Nirvana. Loved Nirvana.
Oh, right.
Nevermind came out and every fucker had a t-shirt on. I was like, they're my band.
Yeah.
Warp. The near-legendary Doctor Who fanzine is back for its 5th issue. As always, it's a sumptuous, glossy, gorgeous feast of goodness, featuring in-depth articles on all manner of Who-related expanded media. Artist John Ridgway and writer Steve Parkhouse discuss their classic 6th Doctor comic strip, Voyager. And writer Alan Stevens takes us through the history of one of Marvel UK's most popular Hooniverse creations, Absalom Dak, Dalek Killer. There are 2 all-colour comic strips too, exclusively commissioned for Warp Warp. The Iron Legion returns in a 22-page story written by Lance Parkin and illustrated by Steve Andrew, this time pitting the rampaging Roman robots against the 12th Doctor, while Absalom Dak gets another adventure with the mighty John Ridgway on our duties.
Hey, Chainsaw Silversides!
On top of all of that, there's the full story of how Canadian animation studio, Nelvana, came very close to making an animated version of Doctor Who in the 1990s. As well as interviews with the project's key creatives, we've recorded the pilot script as an audio drama. Accompanying the magazine as a cover-mounted CD, it stars British sitcom legend Arthur Bostrom as the Doctor.
Endless vast wastelands, distant nothingness stretching as far as the eye can see. Not very inviting. Could be Milton Keynes. No, the stars are all wrong. Very wrong indeed.
Continuing our dedication to the printed form, Warp Warp 5 is only available as a physical copy and can be ordered from anywhere in the world for the UK price of £10.99 plus shipping. For more information and to place an order, visit warpwarp.co.uk. The link in this episode's notes will take you straight to the shop.
Anyway, sorry.
The format of this show is got to pick...
It's after dark. Oliver Reed will turn up in a minute, fall over a sofa.
Yeah. Although I'm the one who's had the most to drink, so the host is Oliver Reed. Talking about Doctor Who, for some fucking reason. But yeah.
Wow. What a Doctor he just plays. Madam, yeah. I just say Oliver Madam, Reed is the Doctor.
Oh, hot Doctor.
He's got that Barossa quality, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you see him in The Devils. Imagine that quality as a Doctor. Or as the Master.
When they roast him alive at the end, like a stuck pig.
Yes. Yeah, that would be a different planet of fire, wouldn't it?
It would. But anyway, we need to keep going.
Anyway, the format of this is five. When it's just one person, they've got to pick five. You guys have got to be in this bunker.
You get one each.
Maybe till you die, you've got five to negotiate between you. So, I'm part of me feels like a dungeon master now. I'm like, what are you going to do? You're in a bunker.
And you could pick one each.
That's what I was going to suggest, but I now feel like I'm running some sort of experiment.
If we go one each, I don't want to go first.
Is it five anything?
I want the chance to choose a different one.
Five
pieces of fiction, so you can have a comic strip.
It doesn't have to be. It doesn't even have to be a piece of fiction. We've had people pick Rolikin's Daleks.
You could have the John Pertwee Toby joke if you so wish.
Yeah. But bear in mind, you've basically got eternity. Some very meagre food rations, kind of cat food and stuff, so you're going to be miserable as fuck. But for some reason, there's a DVD player, you can have the toys, they are there. But there's five things that to do with Doctor Who.
What?
And you would never be able to see anything else ever again.
Although you could enact missing episodes between you, it's like an impromptu comedy troupe.
I know what Mark
the loose cannons.
Mark's looking over in the corner.
Yes.
And what is that?
That is.
I want you to think carefully about if you really want to waste one of your five, driving yourselves mad.
It's just like, you know that album? You bastard! You've wasted your pick where we could have had The Massacre.
I feel like it's Neil.
I've just...
Neil, why have you picked one of the
You've done your Mr. Stay Puft the Marshmallow Man moment, haven't you?
I just...
Next time somebody asks you to pick a Doctor Who thing, you pick an adventure, not a board game.
Just picked... War of the Daleks.
Wow.
It is.
Well, remember, nothing is fixed until you have made final decision.
It's beautiful. Stuck in the.
That
in
is lovely. That.
It's a board game.
Oh, but I hate board games.
But look at this.
One of you is going to kill the other one.
This features this lovely three dimensional box.
Oh, God, I've never seen this. The edge of the box.
Artwork. Very nice. My cousins had that, and I was so jealous of it. I always asked for it. Oh, those Daleks are. They're bringing back some
look at those,
a Proustian rush.
Yes.
On the box there as well, there's a rather wonderful orange and black livery for one of the Daleks. Oh, wow.
Is it basically like Alley Cats?
As I remember, it doesn't play very well, and you just turn it around and it's a bit shit to play.
No.
Or is that just that we never quite understood it?
How dare you!
So it actually plays well.
You're a registration.
That's you getting thoroughly audited next tax year.
Uh-oh.
I'll just say that very quickly, but yeah.
That'll be me, so audited, but not thoroughly.
No.
you play as basically a kind of... Especially being Doctor, but I think it looks like Harry Sullivan.
It does have. I think that's Turlough. Actually,
that's Turlough.
That's Escape from Brendan's School. The game we never got.
This is older than that.
This is about 65.
Yeah, this is the Tom Baker era.
Vizsla Turlough himself.
Oh, it is quite, isn't it?
I think it's just the standard. We've got some soldiers.
Lovely 3D.
He's now setting up.
They don't quite look
the gorgeous
like Daleks,
looking Daleks.
They have that Dapple quality about them.
They weirdly look more like the new Dalek paradigm.
Indeed, yes.
Do you think the new Dalek paradigm is based on this game? Because look at them. They look.
I think the abomination actually. The abomination from Remembrance of the Daleks is like this without the top.
Essentially, you're playing a game of Ludo. You've got to get your Harry Sullivan Turlough type person around the board. And if anyone lands on a black spot, they get to move the Daleks. And what's this?
Do not press it.
Oh, look at this.
And the Daleks do a balletic
It's like witchcraft.
Daleks. They do a balletic dance.
Yes. They do balletically
this
dance
is like a BBC Two interlude, isn't it?
Yeah. And if that gun... Oh, he's just escaped. If one of their guns touches that player, it's back to the beginning. Otherwise, if you get your piece all the way to the middle, you get to explode the control centre. And if you're lucky, one
have
of
just,
the,
have
an
we just
explosion.
Had a preview of Russell T Davies' new Celestial Toymaker episode?
An explosion will come out, and if you're unlucky, then you'll get the Dalek, and that's you exterminated, and it's back to the beginning, and you have to start all over again.
The Toymaker would
And it's just, I love this because it's I love the fact that you've got little Daleks to play with when you don't want to just play with the board.
Yes.
I mean, because you can use these all over the house.
But how do you avoid losing the Daleks? So I can imagine after a couple of months, this will be down to two Daleks and lots of these Vizlor Turlows.
Well, yeah, I mean...
I remember the head's been chewed quite severely.
Yes. You can find quite a lot of these. I've never seen a set with all the Daleks before, but apart from my own. And, but I do quite often see a few of these,
you get this on
the actual Daleks.
Yeah. I can see a compelling case for this.
Well, that's up to your fellow bunker magician,
but obviously I'm not the. I'm just.
No,
the, yeah. I am the adjudicator.
You're a co-host.
I am moved by your case.
They've got
four of the Daleks.
Lego hands.
Yeah, they've got little Lego hands.
Lovely.
Little claws.
So you can actually get them to hold a gun in that.
It's a bit like an ice warrior hand, isn't it?
No. Aidan.
Yeah.
Lego have got little Dalek hands.
Oh. Yeah.
It's a game.
Okay, guys. Well, so is it? What are you thinking?
Well,
is this a worthy addition to your post-apocalyptic?
It cuts down on all the things you could watch. You've literally how much could this sustain you?
I think you have to remember
it's
that
not Trivial Pursuit.
We look at this now. We might anyone other than Mark think, oh, how nice. You got out in the 70s or the 60s. You were, for Christmas, you were the...
Are you saying this is the equivalent of Tracy Island?
Oh,
of Christmas.
Yes. Curiously, my sister had a friend called Tracy Island.
Oh, really?
Island,
nice.
Yeah.
I think
that's one of the things, the other things I remember about my childhood is that when I was saying the things I remember most are not watching the show, but playing with the games and the books and that. There was so little available, and it was effectively so simple. Whereas now, when William reaches the age of maturity, i.e. when he's old enough to operate a DVD machine by himself, you can just select any Doctor Who episodes exists. If you've got the streaming service, and play it.
No, that's not the format of this podcast.
No.
No, but
you've got access to even less.
In our day.
And you want to make one of them.
In
all
our
the
day,
Daleks,
Mark.
The board
now,
game.
As your adjudicator, I would say that the only weakness with this worthy offer is that when it's down to one person, it's going to be pretty fucking useless to play War of the Daleks by yourself.
Which
is all right if it's you that's the last person alive.
Yes, I was going to say, I think you'll find that actually throughout the summer of 77, 78 and 79, I was quite often by myself playing this game. And very happy I was too. I wasn't at all angry.
So in this scenario,
so I think
having
Hayden
and
Doc's
mouldering corpses opposite you like Norman Bates' mum.
Norman Bates'
mum. Will be an upgrade on your childhood.
we'll probably enter a murder suicide pact, will we?
I think it's worthy.
So that's your sort of choice.
That's your opening gambit.
So your opening gambit, we're going to come up with five, and so you might choose not to.
The way
it might be that or Nymon.
Maybe he won't choose Nymon now, in which case I'm all for it.
Well, it makes his case for Nymon quite hard now.
So, round at least one of your fellows. What story or object or concept related to the Doctor Universe?
I completely forgot what I was going to do.
Do you know Hayden?
I've got a vague. What's it going to be? Are you thinking of the annual?
How many syllables?
I don't remember.
Yeah, so Hayden, what's your first suggestion?
You're not going to like this at all, but I thought long and hard about this, and I was thinking if I'm going to be in a nuclear fallout bunker for the rest of my life with limited rations, I want something that's made me happy, something that's given me joy, something that's brought a smile to my face in times of great distress and great just sadness, I suppose, and bitter disappointment as well. And I think for me, I don't know whether this will be a cop-out or not because of the story I'm going to choose, but I'd like to choose the power of the Doctor.
What?
Well, it is, to be fair, as your adjudicator, I would say that there's actually the closest thing to the Five Doctors in the modern era, which is a marvellous, you know...
I think Doc's going to murder you within 2 minutes of being in the bunker, judging by the expression on his face.
Because, and I will tell you now, it's because the Jodie Whittaker era, and I don't know whether this is because we have reviewed it, which means that I've then had to pass a more sort of scrupulous eye against all of the episodes and rewatch them, really dip into what makes the episodes tick. But largely, I have not enjoyed it. I found it very vanilla. I haven't enjoyed the Doctor, and it's not anything to do with Jodie Whittaker's performance. It's the way the Doctor's been written. For me, I don't like that character development. That's all that characteristic of hers to be. Uncaring, I think. So I think about the scene with her and Graham in the TARDIS, where I think, well, doctors before would have said, well, I don't know what to say, but listen, sometimes bad things don't happen. Quick pat on the back, maybe from Tom or whatever, may have given a quick pat. Oh, don't worry, dear old chap, he'll be fine. That sort of thing. And that would have been it, and move on.
And then we're going to go to time flights.
Yeah, exactly. But the trouble is Jodie's doctor then says, no, I'm socially awkward, so I'm just going to go back to TARDIS and think of what to say later on, and maybe I'll tell you it then. And I was just like, oh, that's horrible. And then she did it, actually, funny enough, in Power of the Doctor, when she dropped Dan off in the void that used to be his home, a man who hasn't got a home now, hasn't got a job, and it's just like, there you are. And I mean, when you think of, like, companions in the past, she's bought, the Doctor has bought them sports cars, mortgageless homes,
Lottery tickets.
Lottery tickets. And Dan's just like, there you are, mate. Bye.
Yeah.
And I genuinely think Chameleon got off beat lighter than Dan did.
Then you look at what Tom Baker does to his so-called best friend and drops her off in Aberdeen with a bloody stuffed toy.
That's true, yes.
Without even a fiver in a purse.
Oh, Victoria's so on the wrong beach.
Yeah.
But that always felt. But with the Fourth Doctor and Sarah Jane, that's reluctant. He has to go to a Gallifreyan. I can't take you because humans aren't allowed. All the rest of it. But so that characteristic of Jodie's Doctor, I really didn't get on board with it. And it wasn't helped by the fact that you then have another Doctor in this series only pop up for what was 10 minutes, and I thought had a far better handle on the characterization that I could get behind as a female doctor in the form of Jo Martin, which then led to more of a thing. So anyway, so by the time it gets to Power of the Doctor, my expectations were on the ground, if not below the ground. I was just like, I'm really not going to enjoy this. And by the end of it, I'd whooped, I'd cheered, I was beaming, and it reignited.
I wish we could show you Mark's face in that.
I know, but this is
I'm just thinking to myself, is this a ploy? Is this some sort of power move?
Will end up with things that you all hate? Yes. is this the yellow hut in Orph Wiedersehen?
You're going to end up with five Jodie stories.
we're recording this in April. It was broadcast end of October, was it?
Yeah.
I've rewatched it 6 times.
What? It is a real feel good one.
He's saying this so that in this bunker, you and I will kill each other.
It's just and doing it. Scoops all your treasure just all time.
Yeah, he's just doing it.
No, I tell you what. I do like about Doctor Who. I think it's because there's clearly enough ideas in there for a whole season. You know, they get rid of Dan in the first 8 minutes. That would have been a whole episode on the train. You know, the Master in Russia, that's another episode.
Yeah,
the Cybermen is another episode. The Daleks and the Volcano is another, is probably a mid-season two-parter. Mm. And then the other bits, there's something else that would have fitted in, you know, a little holiday on the moon or something. And then you would have had, like, the final two-parter. So there's 8 stories there, compacted into...
Should have had it instead of Flux.
And I think it was clearly he planned out a whole season, and it was like, no, we'd like it all wrapped up neatly in November. But I think it's okay. But it was funny hearing you talk about all the stuff in there. I'd forgotten most of it.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't remember this bit in the TARDIS of Dan, and I just thought it just rattled along. And I remember Rao Rasputin, and I thought that was quite nice. And
Daleks and Cybermen going.
That was a bit all the various doctors, you know, their little cameos in the afterlife or whatever it was, that was okay. But no, I've realised I can't remember a thing.
I think it was the fact that they gave the older companions something to do as well, and they furthered their characters. I liked that
for sure.
And I liked the fact that there was seeing when Ace jumps off the building on their parachutes and then lands in the TARDIS, you see it from her perspective.
Yeah.
I genuinely thought to myself, how do they film that?
Yeah.
You know, because it was so good, because then you see her sit or stand up, you know, Sophie Aldred stand up. And I love that, and I love the fact that it kind of made me think, well, yeah, you know, of course, when these companions were dropped back on Earth, you know, they were never redundant again, you know, because they have all that wealth of knowledge. So then for them, UNIT to start, you know, recruiting them again and saying, oh, you know, I may need to, because they've defended the Earth and defended other planets. There's a wealth of knowledge there for them to look into. So I suppose there's the spin-off, you know.
But the other side is Sarah Jane, and, you know, you abandoned us and I thought I was special and I'm not. And, you know, I've never had a relationship. I haven't had children because I couldn't. No one else could live up to you.
I thought that wasn't Sarah Jane Smith.
It's interesting, though.
Yeah, because she was never... There was never a romantic element with her and Tom Baker.
I don't think
she was talking about romance anyway. She was just talking about...
Definitely.
She'd done amazing things, and now she's back on Stupid.
Oh, so, and they were never a mount to what she did.
Okay, fair enough.
I get that, yeah.
But I really like Power of the Doctor.
But the Regeneration was beautiful as well. I thought it was one of the best.
But for me, it was great because it basically, along with the buzz that Russell's coming back, my teenage sons have started. They've switched off Doctor Who near the beginning of Matt Smith, and I haven't been interested. But they still rewatch Eccleston and Tennant.
Yeah.
And the glory years, as we call them. Hey.
They are really
and they somehow got the buzz of the Power of the Doctor. The internet started putting stuff out about all the Easter eggs.
And they
watched it and they were like, wow, and they watched it again.
Do you think your antipathy is because you were just an awkward 15-16-year-old and all that was on? It's like the Doctor's a smart ass, it's for everyone. I preferred it when it was just me like this. You know, it's popular, ergo I hate it. We've had this conversation. I've only just started watching Deadwood, and Ian's been nagging me to watch that for years. And my instinctive reflex was, shit, this appears to be popular and critically acclaimed. It must be shit. I don't want to watch it. You know, and so I think of my own relationship with the show when I was, you know, an awkward teenager, and suddenly you think she'd be watching Friday the 13th movies and, you know, all the latest grown-up stuff.
Yeah.
And Doctor Who looks a bit twee and old, and your relationship with it changes, and then you come back. You're funny about the McCoy stuff, aren't you?
Yeah, not... I've really revisited funny. It.
Yeah.
Same.
As a result of this podcast.
Yeah.
Like having to watch...
good stuff. We've now watched Dragonfire 4 times doing various commentaries with people.
There's a lot to be seen, actually.
Obviously, like you said, I'm not the same sort of era as Ian, and definitely
they reached that point that, you know, Colin, for me, Colin was a struggle to get through Colin, and then by the time Sylvester came along, I was like, oh, this is just getting ridiculous. This isn't serious enough for me.
Well, Colin was the first time I switched it off.
I'm a bit too cool dilemma, for this now. I switched it off. I'm doing other stuff.
I struggled with Time and the Rani. I really struggled with Time and the Rani.
Yeah.
But Paris Towers rekindled the faith, and I remember struggling with Delta and the Bannerman, but then when I watched it subsequently, I said, actually, this is quite clever stuff. This is nice stuff. And Dragonfire is the one that the reputation has tanked, and that was like, we went, God, this isn't bad. It's kind of Doctor Who-y. And now you think, it's a bit.
So,
watch this bit, darling.
So, Doc, have you remembered?
Can I put my my main argument against Hayden's suggestion?
Well, can I just quickly answer what Gareth asked me about whether it was just my age at the time? Yeah. The reason why I didn't get on. I think when when it came back, I was 16, doing my GCSEs, and Christopher Eccleston was the Doctor, and I loved that first series.
Mm.
I mean, yes, it had its, you know, had
its, it was utterly glorious.
But it was, honestly, it was sensational. And we did, and we all watched it as a family. I've got a sister who's 11 years younger than me, so she was 5, so she was the perfect age to be getting into it. So we all watched it as a family, we loved it. And it was two things that happened during series 2 that I really started to get quite irked with, and it was the smugness of the Doctor and Rose.
Yes, season 2 does struggle with that.
Yeah, and it was the fact that, and it was the Doctor was quite goofy, I think. Mm. I think in that series he's very goofy. And he's
It is weird though. David Tennant is your McCoy.
I remember thinking that at the time, that there's something about, and I think it's to do with the order that they open with. So New Earth is unbelievably smug. And I think if they had gone with the original running order, which is the wolf one.
Tooth and Claw
was supposed to open it, then they switched it round quite late.
Interesting.
And they just, they permanently look post-coitally smug.
Yes.
In all of those early ones. And it's only when you get to Girl in the Fireplace that suddenly that little crimp of jealousy comes in, and Mickey brings a different dynamic, and suddenly it feels more mature. But opening with that one, you just think, oh, fucking hell, you know, really?
It was the love story between the two as well, which always made me feel a little bit icky, because the Doctor to me was a 900-year-old alien.
Yeah, yeah.
Falling in love with someone who was barely 18 years old. And that for me was just like, especially because I was around that age as well, I just thought that wasn't right.
I didn't believe the line in school reunion.
It was a bit Angel and Buffy.
I can believe the line in school reunion saying you can spend the rest of your life with me, but I can't spend the rest of my life with you, which is why I can't get attached to you. That's why I think the falling in love with the companions is a bad idea. Not just because it's all icky, but because, by definition, the companion is going to be just gone in about a couple of years, which means he'll either have to fall in love with the next companion too, which makes his love meaningless, or he won't fall in love with any other companions, which means that none of the others will be as good as that one.
Yeah,
I think it's a bad idea.
Well, I don't know. I think what you have here is almost an arrested storyline, because I think
I don't know what you're going to say then after arrested.
Yeah, well, you know,
arrested development.
Eccleston is the Doctor.
Gallifrey version of Operation
Eccleston's Utrecht. Eccleston's the Doctor who can't dance, who's awkward around girls.
Yeah,
he's great, and that sort of growing to sort of, you know, respect and love Rose over a couple of seasons works. When he's suddenly replaced with a flash, good-looking smart ass who can do that, that kind of works. But the payoff is quite nice, although it's very hard on Martha, the idea that she's just the rebound that he's not that bothered with, and he's still hung up on Rose, is surprisingly interesting. And then Martha gets an interesting curve where she realises that actually you're just awesome, I think I'm right without you.
Yeah. And then he worked out how to really do it by when he brought Catherine Tate in. Well,
which is actually the only series that I can go back and revisit for pleasure and watch and think this dynamic works.
But he also manages to manoeuvre out that horrible little cul-de-sac by inventing a completely spare Doctor who's mortal, and then Rose gets her mortal Doctor.
Yeah,
and
I don't like that.
Do you not like that?
No, because I think that really is like, so Rose is just like, Oh, I suppose he is sort of the same person, but he's not. I'll snog him anyway.
She snogs him in front of the actual doctor.
No, it doesn't.
I'd never considered that angle.
No.
So it's a bit of a mess. But equally, this idea that the doctor is some sort of sexless monk in space is also some rubbish, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I always thought...
But he'd fall in love with Romana.
Yeah, I thought the doctor was always of a higher plane than falling in love with English Earth teenagers.
Yeah,
that was the only thing for me. They could have had another alien, or they could have. Funny, the River Song thing works for me.
Oh God, no,
that works for me. That's because it's an older actress.
If I was in the bunker of one of you fuckers picked a River Song story, I'm afraid I would murder you all burn it.
To keep myself
warm one evening.
My mother listens to our podcast, and she says, "I never understand a word of what you're saying. I just like you listen to you talking, chatting with your friends." If I say to her, "Oh, listen to this one." She's going to say, I'm not sure about the language some of your new friends use.
Yeah, I'm not sure how
any of this about Rose and the Doctor fits in with Hayden's suggestion that they put Power of the Doctor in. So if I can
we digress.
Present my main argument against that. Mark, can you just pass me that sixth bullet, please? If it had been, if Power of the Doctor had been like the TV movie, Jodie, for whatever reason, only ever had one story, you think, oh, well, I would. And I know that the two of you would as well because of our previous conversations, so, and we're the only people who'll be stuck in this bunker. And you might be thinking, oh, as people did with Paul McGann, what an amazing Doctor his other stories could have been. You might think that would. Looking at Power of the Doctor. But for me, it's just reminding me of the era where you had things like that attitude to Graham having cancer in the TARDIS. And the issue with that is she doesn't need to be able to solve it. But when you've got, the 11th Doctor couldn't solve Vincent's problem, could he? Mm. But he says to Rose at the end of Vincent the Doctor, Amy. And this is going to sound impressive, Amy. But I only read it off my phone.
Amy,
he says, every life is a pile of good things and bad things. The good things don't always soften the bad things, but the bad things don't necessarily spoil the good things or make them unimportant. And we added to his pile of good things. Now, I don't mean that he needs to say exactly the same speech to... She needs to say exactly the same speech to Graham. But something that, all right, she can't help, but at least make the scene worthwhile by saying something that might actually make you watching it sort of catching your voice or clutch at your pearls.
Mm.
Instead of which, what do we get? She just turns around and just sort of, I don't know what you're talking about, really. Can't help.
Imagine how to DM off that would have been. A zinger of a line.
Yeah,
made you feel a bit prickly.
But they both, Moffat would cheat.
Mm.
He'd go, let's go to the Planet Hospital where they can cure anything. But don't tell the Time Lord. You know, we went here, and RTD would have done it in a more roundabout way, and they'd either tried to play it straight. And he'd gone, do you know what? Just today, I'm going to cheat. So let's go to the TARDIS medicine machine, and I'm going to grow you a new kidney. There you go. Poof. Don't tell anyone. Poof. You know. So. I don't know. I don't mind that. It depends whether you think the Doctor is this sort of Christ-like figure, or whether the Doctor is an Old Testament old bugger of a god who just goes, "Well, I've given you free will, so bad shit happens."
He doesn't have to be either, does he?
He's more a Greek god. He sticks around.
Something's coming. A threat like no other. It will take a team of the most unlikely warriors in creation to defeat it. The universe is depending on you. On you! On you!
Coming soon from Cutaway Comics, Phase 1 of an epic new saga, Gods and Monsters. Issue 1, Faustine. Princess of Tharin, written by Stephen Gallagher, with art by Martin Geraghty. Issue 2, Sutekh the Heretic, written by Ian Winterton, with art by Adrian Salmon. And Issue 3, Omega El Trala, by Mark Griffiths, with art from the legendary John Ridgway. An epic clash of good and evil that threatens to rip apart time and space. Coming soon. Follow us on Twitter at Cutaway Universe or visit cutawaycomics.co.uk.
It was at the bar at Riverside Studios, the first DWAS convention I ever attended. I was talking to him at the bar, and he was saying,
I do like the current show, but the only trouble with it is that the Doctor's so godlike nowadays. Mm. And I said, yeah, but Terence, I said, that's kind of your fault, because you made him so good back in the day. And he went, yeah, I suppose you've got a point there. Yeah, we were pretty good, weren't we? You know, so that was his... Dr.
Terence then proceeded to get Hayden paralytically drunk on cider.
We did an event at the La Cigara in Manchester where Terence, a bit like this, had to pick his five favourite scenes.
Mm. Yeah.
And one of them I remember was the Master enters the Time Lord Hall. You know, I may be seated and all this. So he does all that. And he said, I picked that. He was Dead Man's Shoes, you know, that was Roger, and I really didn't like what they'd done with After Roger, what they were buddies. And then he proceeded to then compare J&T to Hitler.
What?
He did, but he said, but let's be frank, Hitler loved dogs. So, yeah, it's lovely, yeah. Terence, bless. Okay. he didn't get on. I think we could safely say that Terence would not be taking anything to do with J&T into the bunker unless he could sort of tie him to the wheel of death and throw knives at him all the time. Oh, in which case he might bring him in.
So, Doc, you've argued against Power of the Doctor.
So you need a positive.
I enjoyed it, but it wouldn't...
Well, you know, you just denied... the one thing that will keep him sane in this bunker.
What would be your first choice then of story?
First choice. Well, you just get five goes.
No, there's five between.
Five between.
So in theory, you all get one. So I think it's very harsh to say no. You can't have Power of the Doctor, Hayden. I'm having two things.
I don't. I don't think that's fine.
I am going to say.
Hey, look, you could have picked Web of Fear. Like everyone thought.
No, you may have distracted me here. Because you, I think you initially said, there'll be sort of themes along. What annuals will you keep? What story do you keep? So anyway, I am going to say, there's going to be three things, I'm afraid, but they're all the same.
Yeah.
The 1977, 1978, and 1979 Terry Nation's Daleks annuals.
Ooh. Well, there we go, Mike. Your work is done. You now have a board game, three annuals, and a story the two of you hate. The eons will fly by.
And three books I've never read. Or a game I've never played. But this is hell.
So that's
good. Yeah, I hate board games.
So you picked the Dalek annual.
Bored for
you picked
reason.
Power of the Doctor. You picked a board game.
Can I request a separate bunker?
So you've got two more goes now to come up with something that will entertain you as a community.
No. Yeah, well, you don't have to be fixed on these.
Because I think, although we've already said that the Doctor is fundamentally... appeals to those of us who are anti-macho. Really, the only reason that we're anti-macho is that it's an inferiority complex, really. And we all realise, to our great sorrow, that none of us ever would pass the entrance examination to be a member of the anti-Dalek force. And the likes of Mark Seven and Joel Shaw were my heroes for many years.
Okay.
They're also there. It can't be denied. There's some of the most gorgeous stuff in there.
Who are they?
They're characters of the anti-Dalek force.
When he's moved on from rewriting Flash Gordon, he then moves into a very stunted beige
phase. He's got the rights to the Daleks, not to the Doctor.
Everything is about disease, grim humanity, stoic masculinity. So basically, Blake Seven.
Okay.
Survivors.
And survivors.
Yes.
No.
And of course, these three
survivors. We're in a nuclear bunker.
These three annuals are Dalek stuff without the Doctor. Now, I'm not suggesting in any way this is a way of trying to get the sympathy of the Cutaway Comics chaps.
Indeed, yes. well, it must be said that I always like the backup strips because I think the Doctor gets in the way of the plot a lot of the time. Because although the Doctor is witty and wonderful, you can't change the Doctor as a character, not fundamentally. The Doctor remains a constant. The Doctor has to put all of the pieces back more or less in the same place on the chessboard. And the Doctor is arguably, and something we explore in things like Paradise Tower, a force for the worse. The Doctor is a chaos tourist who is in town for no more than 12 hours normally, turns everything upside down and goes, oh, well, he'll be grand. You know, I was thinking of the our favourite, The Sunmaker, which I'm very surprised hasn't come up as a pick yet, you know, which I imagine you all watch at Christmas with a few eggnogs in the office. And that idea that he's deposed everyone, all of the structure of that society has all gone to tits, and he just walks out and goes, oh, you'll be fine, Earth will be all right by now, I'm sure, and you've got a load of cargo shuttles. I reckon within 2 years, everyone's dead on Pluto. The suns have run out of fuel. The black marketeers and the mafia have taken over, and everyone's dead. And that's how the sun
makes it. It's the long game, isn't it? Yeah. It's the long game. It's the turning.
So the Doctor, as a chaos tourist,
it's the fall of communism.
But it also, it's the fall of communism. It's the fall of Libya, and the idea that the universe has to kind of muddle through without the Doctor, and that's what Turn Left is all about, that there's this Doctor-shaped hole in the narrative and someone else fills it, but usually at great cost, which is, of course, the other Doctor Who cop-out, where the Doctor never has to make the horrible decision because there's always some convenient deputy commander of the base who steps up at the right moment.
Tree woman.
And blunders. Yeah, tree woman. Poor tree woman.
Yeah.
You know, who doesn't even save the day and burns to a crisp.
But doesn't... one's always stuck on Rachel Crowe a bit because there's no actual...
So the anti-Dalek force, you know...
Why does the Doctor let her...
It's just saving... you're saving the universe and your planet rather than relying on the Doctor to do it, aren't you?
Yes.
And it's not just... it's also the some of the gorgeous stuff like the...
I like the puzzles.
The puzzles are very So-and-so is stuck in an anti-Dalek force base... And the supply ship isn't due for another 6 months, and he's only one packet of cigarettes left. How does he? What's the word?
Ration
these out so he has enough.
There's that. And then what are the 80 you have? 18 items. It's like based on a sort of NASA thing, you know.
And of course, you can take the heavy canisters of air because, of course, on a weightless planet,
indeed.
You don't. Oh, brilliant! And I think because they've used to fill stuff with these anti-Dalek force stories, and with the whole scripts lifted from TV Century One
Dalek
stories.
Glorious!
They never went down the road of having some of those bizarre stories that used to appear in the Doctor Who annuals, like.
The sinister
slithers of Strick, and the sponge. And what was that story you were talking about the other day, Aidan?
Oh, the fishmen of Canalinga.
Yeah, would have sparked some discussion.
Because is that where Chevy Brown wrote that?
I know the fishmen of Canalinga, a lot of people thought it sucked, and a lot of people generally thought it blew them away.
Yeah.
But
it always went that way, well.
Your mother's going to be
wood on Canalinga.
Old Mar Dog. I hope you enjoyed.
Oh dear. Well,
but I don't. Even with a story like the Fisherman of Canalinga, I think, you know, just the fact that you've got one good story doesn't justify an old album.
As your adjudicator, I have to say you've lost me now. you've gone to the animal tat.
This is
going to be a hoot, this bunker.
I mean, you've got two more choices. If you're sticking with these choices, you've got two more choices between you. I mean, where does Nymon
go? So what I would say for your last two, as your adjudicator, I would say you now need to win a consensus for your last two.
Oh, yes, no, I'm
sorry. So definitely Nymon then.
You all need to propose one each, and then you pick two as a consensus.
Well, one of Gareth's five was Nymon.
It was.
Oh.
And I wouldn't be without it in the afterlife.
Well, obviously,
that's because you're going to hell.
If I'm looking for consensus, I'm not going to get Nymon.
So you've got to cannily pick your choices.
I would think,
or allow them to have something awful. Yeah, all end up with something.
Well, they already has got something awful.
They're all going to end up with something.
Yes.
But you're telling me you couldn't actually watch in the much same way as I do actually. By what Gareth said in his interview was actually Nymon. we'll, you know, you said, when you said, actually, yeah, there's other series, Doctor Who, but when you, actually, you can watch Nine-One over and over again because it's so much fun.
Yes.
Yeah. And Power the Doctor, Doctor Who, great does Doctor Who, have fun Doctor Who.
And Power the Doctor is fun.
I have a story I would like to contribute for fun reasons.
Yeah.
Okay.
Battlefield. It's a hoot.
Shame.
Oh.
Shame.
Damn.
See, I was going to suggest, because I recently we've both been...
So that was quick on Battlefield, wasn't it? That's been discounted.
Damn it.
I don't think Doc fans that fun.
We've recently, for podcast purposes, been going back over the Troughton era.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder if we should pick one of the... One of the long Troughton...
You're maxing out your value for money.
Or the Evasion, I would say. Because right. And also, yeah, I mean,
yeah,
the Invasion's got a lot of great stuff in it. It's got a lot of great characters.
It's not really a Troughton story, though, is it?
What's that?
It's not really what you'd call a Troughton story, the Invasion. It's a season 7 tryout
that's a year early.
Do you think it's not? Obviously, I know you're
from
not talking literally.
Perspective,
it's not
it's,
not literally
it's,
a Troughton story.
It's
but
really not a Troughton story. I think that is a season 7, and I think Troughton jars with what they're trying to do.
Well, isn't that partly because
Gareth's words just cut through my chest.
Isn't that always because Tobias Vaughan, what's his name? Kevin Stoney steals every scene he's in.
Yeah, but I think that there is an energy and a pitch for that which is wrong. It's absolutely wrong for Troughton. Troughton looks at his best, you know, in things like the Crotons, ooh, Butterfingers and all that stuff, and it doesn't really scan.
You're
going
to be
on a
bunker, Grant.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't have to watch it.
It's very much a Pertwee story in a way.
It is a Pertwee story.
In that it's based on Earth. You've almost literally got Unit with you.
It's Sherwin's tryout for that. So. Mm. But, you know, I'm not in this bunker, as you rightly point out. So I'll be next door watching Horns of Nymon chuckling away.
You're going to leave the bunker and stagger across. Staggering across the radioactive slag to go and knock on.
I've just shortened my life by 83 years. It's worth it, damn it.
This is the madam you gave £5 to, this radioactive slag. That's a line from David Bowie as well.
Would the War Games have been a better choice? Because then that's
more
of it. And there's more of it. Plus, you've got
Zoe
incredible. and you've got that incredible final episode and those final last scenes, which I think sometimes when you're alone, but what we need is a lot of good weepy.
Well, you could spend months doing the, you know, the podcast Ian always mentions, that A Minute of Heat, where they dissect heat 1 minute at a time. You could do a minute of War Games. That would eke out. Oh. That would eke out years, wouldn't it? Or you digest a minute at a time and then do your own bunker podcast on that 1 minute.
It's quite repetitive, isn't it?
For me, if I was to choose between two,
four parts.
Well, yeah, but for four parts, the general idea of a standard Doctor story from classic era, isn't it? Four part story. What part three of which is padding? Isn't War Games a 10-part story, parts 3 to 9 of which are padding?
I mean, Malcolm, the novelisation manages to canter through those 10 episodes in 18 pages.
It's one of those books that you remember for being very, very thin on the shelf.
Very thin volume.
You'd have Doctor of the Daleks and the Moon Bay, and the side bit would be that thick, as if you dropped them in the bath and allowed them to dry.
Well, I was discussing this with Evil of the Daleks, and you could tell Evil of the Daleks, I think, in 90 minutes. You know, part one basically has to be the opening sequence. That's your pre-credits teaser with the TARDIS getting nicked.
Yeah.
You then need 5 minutes of buggering around in the antique shop, and then you get another, you know, you get another 25 minutes in Victorian England, and then 5-10 minutes while they blow it up, 40 minutes on Scarrow, done.
Yeah, actually, I agree with that.
You literally have four episodes where nothing happens in a Victorian house. Mm. That's it.
Well,
entertaining, but maybe, but no.
And that's the entertainment factor that would win.
Yeah, I think you're right. War Games does repeat. It is.
Oh, I don't.
I love all the comedy Pancho Villa.
I don't.
I mean, you've got the Power of the Doctor.
No, that's if you think of Enemy of the World.
If I had to choose one out of the War Games and the Invasion, I would choose the Invasion.
Mm. Okay, well, we're down to a vote. What about you, chaps? Then
between War Games and the Invasion,
well,
you don't have to have that.
Hayden has narrowed the vote now.
Okay, well, let's have Invasion. Right, yes. So let's pick this last story then. Right,
so you're sticking with the annual and the board game. I mean, I'm not in this bunker, but I'm bloody glad.
Well, that board game would drive me insane. The doctor, to be honest, but
well, you've all picked something that's incredibly personal yet utterly selfish.
Yeah,
and you've now got to try and cover up the ground with something that you can actually watch as a group.
This is like trying to get my three boys to choose between them as a consensus what to watch.
Would you?
On movie night. Well, almost impossible.
Oh, I know a story that we all really like. Actually, I know a story that I know two of us definitely really love. I'm not so sure about yourself, Doc, so you might have hit the deciding vote on this again. But
Is it Invasion of the Dinosaurs?
God, you imagine how I love that.
But you're not far off. What about the Green Death?
Oh, don't mind that. I think it's a bit.
It's got a brilliant. I just love that ending. I can watch the ending of it over and over again.
Because you said about having a weepy moment. It's got the very the end of the window.
I know. I said that though when I was trying to push War Games.
I'm not sure that any of us should have a say when the only Welshman in the room ought to get to have a say on some of those accents.
Hayden.
The
name Hayden. Yeah. Well,
just because your name's been to Wales.
Caught Welsh. My name was Welsh.
I am indeed.
That would qualify me for the football team.
I could play for football. I suppose what I would say is, while you're all clutching at straws for something that you can both watch, if I was doing this choosing, I think I would be looking for a big, quotable, enjoyable, fruity performance.
Well, that's why you're after Nyman, though, isn't it?
No, I was about to say what I think you're all missing is either Tom or Delgado. Something that would be comforting and lovely on one of those particularly grim days down the bunker.
Something that
would warm the soul.
Okay. Do you know what I reckon we should do? We should all go 1, 2, 3 and then say the score and everything we're all saying. Ready, okay? Ready?
1, 2, 3.
City of Death.
Oh, God, my God.
I don't know what you were talking about.
It was a story that was all in our heads just then.
Something that was City of Death. Warm and fuzzy and lovely.
City of Death is a very good call.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that music as well.
If you literally could never watch Nyman again, how bad do you feel?
What, if I could never watch it again? That'd be really. That'd be really depressing.
But I am willing to take that chance.
See, they'd be happy to see me miserable.
What's the one that you guys would be miserable if you could? Literally, think you could never see it again. Maybe you should all be allowed to pick the one you're never allowed. You'd be so sad if you could never see it again.
One of my favourite stories of all time is The Web of Fear, but it's the wrong story to have when you're in a bunker. So I'm not choosing that.
Yeah.
The one I really honestly probably couldn't live without is probably Pyramids of Mars.
That's getting picked a lot for the bunker.
Mm. Mighty Sutek.
Yes.
Particularly
the hand of Sutek's pillow.
Okay, I'll get rid of my board game. I'll put my board game back. I shall put Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
There is a community minded man.
So there we are.
Fun. You'd literally the food deprivation and the bad special effects, you'd bond. You'd just be going, look at that!
We're not here for the special effects, are we?
No.
Pyramids would be even more sort of spiced up by our being able to consider that when we think that Sutek is really hating the Doctor, it's nowhere near as much as Gabriel Wolf was hating the Tom Baker.
Yeah, indeed, yes. So are you selfishly clinging on to your Dalek annual then, now that, you know, Mark has made the supreme sacrifice?
Yes.
So far we've got Invasion of the Dinosaurs,
yeah.
Still got Power of the Doctor, still got your annual.
And the Invasion.
And the Invasion.
That's four.
And the Invasion.
Dark Invasion of Earth. So we just have all the Invasion.
Do you know what? Actually, for nostalgic reasons, I would happily trade Power of the Doctor for Pyramids of Mars.
Mm. Yes, let's do it. Now we're talking. Yeah. Now you're coming together as a community. Yeah. Bonding. Yeah.
Well, let's have Invasion 1999 from 2000.
We're in a very peculiar.
Diglett cards for your shiny Charizard.
Yeah, we're in a very peculiar version of like a corporate team building exercise.
Hey, Nick, can you just put away your shiny Charizard, please?
Yes.
Oh, of course, no, it's Pokemon cards.
Can I say? I fell off my chair in abject shock and horror when I saw that Dalek Invasion of Earth was voted by DWM the greatest heart mull of them all. It is appalling.
It's too.
I rewatched it when the Blu-ray set came out with open mind, and you get to part four, and Terry Nation literally turns the plot off.
But I generally think most people don't watch past that.
Well, clearly not, because they arrive at the mine.
Oh, this is a really good setup.
They arrive at the mine. And there's some half-assed.
And then they
plan
go. I've watched the colour version,
which is brilliant.
And literally, as far as I can tell,
I don't think they generally watch it all.
No, as far as I can tell, Hartnell goes.
You have the colour version.
Attack the Daleks! Attack the Daleks! Attack the Daleks! And then everyone kills the Daleks, and they all go home for tea.
Yeah, you're right.
And all the Daleks are fine.
You could have the Dalek Invasion of Earth. 2158.
Oh well, that's it. We're fucked, aren't we?
That's allowed. That's been picked by several people.
Dalek Invasion of Earth 2158.
It has got some super lines in it, hasn't it?
It's very entertaining.
Yes. It's under the bridge.
And they've sorted out the plot. Because...
Sorry, we're talking about the Dalek Mini Mover or the original TV?
No, not the original TV. The movie, where they've gone back, they've gone, oh yeah, it doesn't have an ending, does it?
Yeah.
Oh right, yeah, we better have the marvellous magnetic powers of the Earth released and it sucks them all down into the Earth's core.
Yeah.
Dalek's gone.
Is that not the plot of the TV version?
No.
They were going to...
If it is, they haven't...
They put an engine in the Earth's core and pilot it around.
They haven't explained that that's what happens. It is literally the Robo-Men rise up and overthrow the four Daleks that appear to be running the Earth and Bedfordshire, and that's it.
How are the plots different?
Well, because if you notice at the end, the flying saucer gets sucked down to the ground, all the Daleks get sucked into the mine shaft.
Happens in the TV version?
The Robo-Men rise up and chuck them down a railway siding.
But that's effectively the Robo-Men in both cases rise up and attack the Daleks, don't they?
Yes, and that's great news for people in the movie, in Bedfordshire.
But in
it
the
doesn't
in,
exactly help anyone.
In the movie, they then go one. That's a building block to then ultimately defeating the Daleks on the planet Earth.
Oh, we're all soft.
So I think that's a good call, but
only if you assume that there's only one Dalek saucer on Earth.
Well, that's true.
The only regret I have is that the soundtrack to Doctor Who and the Daleks was not the soundtrack for 2150 AD. Because the soundtrack's brilliant. Barry Gray doing the electronic music.
That jazz is a bit shit.
Yeah, but it's also it's the music of Susan going through the. The Petrified Forest.
But it has
If we could have that music in 2150 AD, I'd be like,
wow. It hasn't got Cribbins, though.
I'm not too early.
Cribbins is a classic.
Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
I like the Robo Men in their little fetish suits, eating jelly beans.
Eating their
I grew up just thinking of Daleks doing that.
That was
the
Daleks. As your adjudicator, I would say your bunker now sounds at least 40% more fun to be trapped in for all eternity.
So what have we got?
Pyramids.
We've got the annuals, Terry Nation annuals. We've got Invasion of the Dinosaurs. Invasion.
We're having that. Yeah.
Did we say Pyramids?
That's so much better than Green
Pyramids of Mars, and then the fifth one. But we're debating.
Dalek annual.
Isn't it like the Dalek Invasion Earth 2150?
No, we've got that.
I think we should have my rainy day story, which is Brain of Morbius.
Yeah. And you ditch your annuals.
Dalek Invasion of Earth, Invasion.
Yeah.
Invasion of the Dinosaurs. Pyramids of Mars.
The Invasion of
Brain of Morbius.
Morbius.
And
Brain of Morbius.
So why Brain of Morbius? Why is Brain of Morbius your rainy day show?
I'm not saying it's I'm not saying it's something like, I mean, I think it's almost impossible to beat something like Empty Child, Doctor Dances.
I think it's far better.
For thrilling me. And for sheer quality and skill, it's pretty difficult to beat Blink. But just for some, oh, I love.
Oh, listen, you've got
you've got effectively a Kevin Stoney-like character in Philip Madoc, who steals every screen he's in.
Yeah.
Steals every screen he's in? Sorry. I'm firmly of the belief that even if it contains a slight Welsh lilt, supervillains should always speak in received pronunciation.
Oh.
Maren's a cracking character.
Mm. Kondo is there's so much kudos, you know. Mm. You take Kondo's arm for this, it's gorgeous.
You chicken brain biological disaster.
You take Kondo's arm for this.
Some of the lines. I'll see that palsied Harridan scream for death before I'm done with her.
And let's be honest, you know, Paul Cornell got a whole book out of the silent dirigibles of the Hutaik and melted in our bones while almost a million miles distant.
I think Michael Spicer's voice is quite similar to Gabriel Wolf's in being.
I when we saw Talons at the BFI, which was literally like 2 days before lockdown, it felt like we were at the end of civilization and we'd never see each other again. It did feel like going into the bunker.
Yeah,
I'd forgotten how gorgeously over the top his Magnus Greel is, and his Morbius is also pretty good.
Mm-hmm. But the whole "you've locked me into hell for eternity" thing, and the
even a sponge under the sea has one life. You've got
even better line than that is, you know, when he does the crowning irony joke. The pun was irresistible. And he says, "You fool!"
The pun was irresistible.
Of course, I'm forgetting. It takes me right back to my childhood when I visited the Doctor Who exhibition in Blackpool.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
My dad,
the special.
My dad tells me to just wait inside the exhibition while he's getting the tickets. I stand against in this black corridor against what I think is just a wall, which is actually the darkened alcove with the Morbius brain tank in, set on a 30-second timer to suddenly light up green and scream, "You have locked me into hell for eternity." So I'm standing there like this.
Wow.
This suddenly screams in my ear. I jump 6 inches, return to Earth, and promptly wet myself.
See, this is a reason why I'd argue against having Brain and Morbius. I don't want to be dodging puddles of piss in our little bunker.
See, yeah, I think the smell of wet corduroy always reminds me of Doctor.
We've all seen Threads.
I know. Because there's three of you, I could see a Christmas amateur dramatics restaging of the Brain of Morbius between you and
there. It reminds me of my dad spent 2 years in the Antarctic as a man, and when it was midwinter, they couldn't go out for like months. Mm. It was just dark. And they went, there's photographs, they only had like, because obviously it was 1962, 63. Yeah. So they only had a limited amount of records, a limited amount of film reels,
yeah.
And so they just learned Some Like It Hot, and they turned the sound down and dressed up and did Some Like It Hot over and over again.
Well apparently
in the British Antarctic
Survey. Don't the scientific camps at the Antarctic watch The Thing every Christmas?
Oh, yeah.
Is that kind of Christmas do?
I think for our last pick we should have had the Full Circle Viewmaster.
Oh.
We can sit down and imagine these three-dimensional images of Tom and Adric.
I've just remembered.
You're going to be in a bunker with no Adric.
Brain of Morbius was responsible for the Timeless Children, wasn't it?
Yes.
Oh, no.
But that's not their fault.
That means you're going to constantly be talking about the Timeless Children. Yeah. Thank God the world's ended, so we never got
thank
to.
Thank God.
Morbius and Mars are probably a little bit too much cut from the same similar cloth.
Yes.
So I don't think we're getting a lot of variety for our buck there. I think we should choose one of those.
Whereas the invasion of the dinosaurs is totally different.
I mean, if you do think that all the doctors you haven't got represented. Mm.
That's true.
You've got a Troughton, you've got two Toms.
I did. I just
and a John.
Tom is the best actor.
And you got nothing from the 80s.
What about the 80s? What about a Kinder or an Earthshock? I mean, personally, I'd love a Kinder, but
I don't want a depressing end.
I used to listen to a Doctor Who podcast where the whole shtick was a guy who was a long-term fan and a guy who's never seen them before watching them together. And whatever was the story before Kinder, and they say, and next week we're going to be watching an episode called Kinder.
Nice.
Kinder.
No, but they were tricky, though. I used to look through the Doctor Who... God, what was it? The Doctor Who Annual 1995 or 96, whatever it was, and it had all the production codes and all the names and stuff. I'd look through and go, what's Kinder? What's Frontios? What's Logopolis?
Logopolis is fair.
Yeah. I've been saying The Mask of Mandragora.
Mandragora. Yeah, Mandragora. It's something endlessly quotable in there. So something like, let's say, The Visitation, where you could all do the, you know, speak like Richard Mace.
The gentleman of the road.
Never you jest. That went down like a lead scene.
It's got me thinking.
You have got Daleks. So at least you've got Daleks. And you've got
Daleks. We've got Cybermen.
Yeah.
We've got Tom Baker in there. We've got one of the films.
Mm-hmm. This is a good selection. We've got Unit.
I think you're right that Mobius and we don't Pyramids scratch the same itch.
We don't have a modern series. We don't have a new series story.
I think you guys could live without the modern series.
I'd have gone with Epitrian and Dr. Danzig, but listeners to our podcast have heard me go on and on about that so many times that...
It would be nice. The first time I thought Rose was really good.
I thought End of the World, I thought, oh my god, this is amazing. And it was Charles Dr. Dance, I thought, oh my god, this is something
that's
on a completely different level.
They're out in the fresh air. They've got the whole setup of Patient Zero, and I just thought the 11th Hour, perhaps.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
Okay, let's have that as a change of pace, a change of flavour. It has got that. It's a nice.
I know we should mention it.
It's also what country villages used to look
Karen,
like.
Karen Gillan, they were a very attractive woman as well.
And 11th Hour. She's the astonishing.
You know, we're in this bunker
having a child that you don't want to strangle.
It's my turn to watch the 11th Hour.
That made me wet myself nearly when I noticed that.
You forgot to wash the communal sock.
She's running downstairs in a worried leather out there. So you notice that the door at the end of the corridor is open.
Your mum's going to love this podcast.
Never worked for the 11th Hour. As your adjudicator, I would say that I'm not sure that it's representative of the rest of that season.
It doesn't have to be.
I think there's better stuff in there that you could.
The only reason Hayden's taking Power of the Doctor, what is it, Power of the Doctor, because it wasn't representative of the rest of the season, isn't it?
The era.
don't try and out-logic me, Gareth.
Actually, if we were talking... But it's a good smorgasbord. I mean, I would say it's in the same way that I think you could have picked the five Doctors and no one would go, well, that's a terrible idea. It appears to have everything in it.
Mm.
You know, it ticks everyone is going to find something they like in the five Doctors eventually, whether it's anally on the musical staircase or the,
anally on the... Oh, anally,
sorry. Oh, poor Mother Doc.
Doc's
mother,
your
that was Doc that titles.
He was anally on the musical staircase.
Indeed.
Is that like bearing your bottom... sitting on a piano keyboard instead of going up and down.
We don't have the benefit of the Spider-Man theme on this podcast. As your adjudicator, I would like to point out that the bar closes in 10 minutes.
Lord.
So
what have we got?
Invasion of the Dinosaurs, Invasion, Pyramids of Mars...
Dalek Invasion.
Three of which we've only chosen to the word invasion.
You guys definitely have a type, don't you?
Yeah. And the fifth one, we originally said the 11th Hour, but Gareth wasn't sure.
Well, I'm not in the bunker with you, so I don't have to watch the bloody
Make
game.
A decision. You literally got to be locked in the bunker now because
I can take to the bar. I can take the whole of season 17 with me to my bunker.
We are in the Crown Plaza, and they, for some reason, closed the bar at 11 o'clock.
Let's go for Let's go for Rhythm of Hell for no other reason than I want to drink.
Okay.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
You've taught
I
this
I will
one
sit on that. Well, I'm happy with all five now.
Yeah.
We started off thinking, oh,
it
would
have been a lot shorter if we'd said, oh, I'd like a complete collection of the cutaway comics.
Oh, and you would be blessed.
Yes.
Blessed. And of course you would have the exquisite
adjudicator, what do you think of that?
You would have the exquisite VAM discs to keep you entertained for years.
Well, do we not get, like, you know, the complete work, the equivalent of the complete works of Shakespeare and
this is down to
we have to be careful because otherwise the BBC will go.
You get the best of Bobby Davro. You get
right. Okay.
But anyway, the bar is going to shut.
Right.
So I'm going to fade this bit out and the music will come on. And Diddly Dummers, it's been amazing.
Thank you, Chuck.
It's been emotional.
It's been emotional.
Thanks, guys. Thank you for having us.
I look forward
much
to you recounting this going, what the fuck is going on?
You have been listening to The Bunker from Cutaway Universe. Your host has been Ian Winterton. Produced by James Steventon of Bamalan Productions. Gods and Monsters advert voiced by Brian Blessed. All music by Paul Phillips. For more on Cutaway and to buy online, visit cutawaycomics.co.uk or follow us on Twitter at cutaway.